Tobias Moskowitz got a degree in industrial management and industrial engineering with distinction from Purdue. He got a master's degree in management from Purdue and then a PhD in finance from UCLA. Went on to become a professor of finance at the University of Chicago's Booth School of Business. He has won all of the awards that you can win in his field. He's been cited in works in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and he now teaches a sports analytics class at Yale. He is the author of one of the most clever, interesting sports books you can get. It's called Scorecasting. Tobias, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the nice words, too. I appreciate that.
Well, it's just such an interesting book because the subtitle is The Hidden Influences Behind How Sports Are Played and the Games Are Won. What are you talking about there? What is this book about, Tobias?
So the book is, it's really about applying concepts like...
Concepts like what there, Toby?
I'm sorry?
You cut out there for a second. The book is about applying concepts like what?
Like statistics and economics, which I know sounds super exciting to everybody, but it's more about behavioral insights into how sports are played and games are won. So thinking about things like, how rare is it to, go on a losing streak of 10 games or,
Perfect. We've been having this thing at WGN Radio lately where the phone company doesn't like our interviews and they suddenly cut them out. So I'll let Colin reconnect with us here. And as soon as he's on, we'll rejoin the conversation. But I know he's going to say things like NBA players shoot the same free throw percentage at home as they do on the road. One of the most interesting things, though, is that he looks at the strike zone and he says, what are the chances that the umpire will call an outside pitch a strike or a pitch that is a strike a ball? Under what circumstances and for whom? And there are bona fide trends there that happen. Colin, give me a thumbs up when our guest is back. Is he back? You were saying yes, he is, or no, he isn't. He is not back yet. And there is some home field advantage to that, in that the umpire doesn't want to be booed any more than the pitcher or the batter does, or something like that. Tobias, I was covering for you there a little bit. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to stay still, sir. I'm not sure why the call keeps dropping, but I heard you say something about umpires and not wanting to be booed by the fans. That's exactly right, which is, some of the things we analyze in the book are the hidden side of things, which is umpires are human as well, and they get their feelings hurt. They feel pressure just like the players, and they've got to perform. And they typically tend to side with the home team, and also with with the crowd. And so you see that that they're human as well. They're subject to the same errors that we all make.
You show the strike zone, and then after analyzing thousands and thousands of pitches, you say, okay, these pitches were called a strike, which were outside the strike zone, or these were called a ball that are inside the strike zone. And you said that if there's an 0-2 account, say no balls, two strikes on a star hitter, and the next pitch is a strike, the umpire is inclined to call it a ball because he knows people want to see the slugger get a chance to hit, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, in fact, my kids and I are in Chicago. We're going to go to the Cubs game this afternoon, and I'm going to annoy them by showing them which pitch is more likely to be called wrong. And they're going to just look at me and be like, please, just watch the game. But that's exactly right. The strike zone shrinks when there's already two strikes on the batter, and it expands when there's three balls in the batter. In some ways, as fans, we want that, right? We want to let the players determine their own fate. We hate it when the referees or the umpires have an influence on the game. But, they're not applying the rules consistently.
What do you think, then, in the closing minutes of a game, a championship, say, should the umpire suspend the rules and not call the traveling or, let the players finish the game? Or should the umpire adhere to the rules?
You know, it's so funny. I think it depends who you talk to. Obviously, we all want our teams to win. I think if you talk to most fans, they would say, we want the refs to swallow the whistle, to just let the players play. But if you talk to diehards of the game, you know, Mark Cuban's like this, which is he wants the rules to be applied equally and the same every time. And I'm sympathetic to that, right? The rules are there for a reason. I think as fans, though, we don't like it when the ref determines the outcome. We'd like to see that last shot taken, whether there's a travel or not.
Right, but I also think the ref didn't determine the outcome. The player did. If you were playing defense and the guy who scored the winning shot traveled, you'd like a little credit for the defense you were playing. You're being denied now.
I think that's a great point. It really is. I just think that most fans still view it as the referee made the decision as opposed to, you know, and this is, I think, one of the other things that we talk about in the book, something called omission bias, which is making the wrong call seems a lot worse than not making the call. But to your point, you're absolutely correct. Not making a call is also an error and shouldn't be. It's really still about the players at the end of the day.
How has the new rules in baseball changed your thinking about the game? Say in the 10th inning, there's a runner on second. What does that do to the game? Does it improve it? What's your thought about that in general?
I think that's really interesting. I mean, I think in lots of ways it's improved. It's sped up the game, which I think was needed. I mean, don't forget, baseball's competing with basketball and the NFL. These are very fast-paced games, even though an NFL game takes forever. But there's still a lot of excitement, a lot of action. So I think baseball has done a good job of speeding up the game, making it more accessible to fans. What I think is interesting from my perspective is thinking about the analytics. You know, the fact that they got rid of the defensive switch, right? Can't do that anymore because it was too effective, and it was in some ways boring the game, according to Major League Baseball. Putting the runner on second in extra innings, I think, is interesting, and I think it makes the game a bit more exciting. So I'm all for those small rule changes. What I like about baseball in particular, and they do a good job of this, is before they institute a rule change, they have their own analytics team that looks into what are the likely effects of this. How do we think this is going to play out? They do a good job with that.
This may be a sports psychology question, but do you think losing begets losing? I've been arguing that while the White Sox are on a historic losing streak, they may be the worst team in modern baseball history. The players... it's sort of like the sum is less than the whole of the parts. The players aren't all, to the player, that bad. They all deserve to be in the major leagues. And put on other teams, they would do better. And I just wonder if there's something about negative momentum. Does momentum exist in sports?
So I would say this is probably the most controversial topic that I always get asked. Because everybody believes in momentum very much in sports, both on the positive and negative side. But if you look at the data, there's really not a lot of evidence for it. And so what I would say is there may be a little bit of momentum. And, you know, particularly I think the one you're talking about right now is one that is somewhat real. When you lose, you get this sort of losing culture or losing attitude. You feel defeated. It can have some persistence to it. But the reality is it has a lot less persistence than we believe. You know, the White Sox are losing because they're just not a very good team, quite frankly. The fact that they're continuing to lose might make them a tiny bit worse, but I think overall it just has a very little effect. But we act as if it has a very big effect. Put it a little differently, I don't think you could send psychologists into the White Sox clubhouse, get them all fired up and get them all positive, and they'd win too many more games. Maybe a couple, but it's not going to make much of a difference.
The White Sox aren't a very good team. How dare you, sir? How dare you?
It's not a personal. It's just a factual statement. Hey, the Cubs aren't doing so great either, but they're better. Let's put it that way.
Well, since the middle of May, the White Sox have the second worst record in baseball, and the Cubs have the third. So you're right about that. Tobias, I you know I want you to update the book, and you haven't, but it still stands, even though some of the names and teams are slightly dated. The book came out several years ago, but it's called Scorecasting, and it's the hidden influence behind how sports are played and games are won, Scorecasting. My best to you and your family. Enjoy Wrigley Field today.
We will. Thank you so much.